China or the IMF? Who's a better lender to poor countries that want to grow? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. At an estimated $900 billion, China's Belt and Road Project is way bigger than the U.S. Marshall Plan after World War II. It involves financing pipelines in Pakistan, railways in Russia, and much more to kickstart a new era of globalization. But the head of the IMF, Christine Lagarde, has a warning.
The Belt and Road Initiative can provide much-needed infrastructure financing to partner countries. But these ventures can also lead to problematic increase in debt, potentially limited other spending as debt services arise. And the key should be really to not enter agreement that would cause financial difficulties in the future on both sides.
In other words, don't put already struggling countries in a debt crisis. Stephen Gelb is with the Overseas Development Institute in London.
China is not alone in using finance to promote its interests. Well, in the 1970s, Western private banks in particular were essentially pushing more loans for infrastructure onto many developing countries, particularly in Latin America and Asia, and pushing up their debt levels. And that was a major factor, really, in contributing to the debt crisis in the early 1980s. And the IMF at that time was not expressing sufficient concern in the way it's doing now.
Some of the countries involved here, Pakistan, a $62 billion project, Sri Lanka, a $1 billion port project. These are countries that both desperately need an economic boost, but they are also vulnerable. What's the right balance?
I think a big question is whether or not these are loans going into projects that will contribute to economic growth in those countries, and in particular contribute to export earnings of harder currency than their own domestic currencies, so that they can use some of those earnings to service the debt. And I think one of the advantages of the Belt and Road Initiative is that the terms of the debt, the interest rates and so on, may be a little easier on some of these countries than borrowing from other possible sources like private banks in the West.
And could the IMF do things better? Have they become too cautious?
It would seem that the IMF has been too cautious, particularly in the years since the global financial crisis. By the IMF lending more, it might have reduced the debt burden from private lenders, which in the case of many African countries is now looming as a problem already.
Stephen Gelb, let's do the numbers. The UK's takeover panel ruled moments ago Disney must offer to buy Sky if its purchase of 21st Century Fox's entertainment unit is approved. Oil prices are losing steam on President Trump's warning that Russia should, quote, get ready for U.S. missiles fired at Syria in response to an alleged chemical attack last weekend. Now, staying with crude, there'll be no more offshore oil and gas exploration for New Zealand. The nation's prime minister announced the ban today in a bid to combat climate change. The BBC's Lisa Santarelli has more.
New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is walking the talk, and that's because she had promised on the campaign trail to take steps to protect the environment and combat climate change by reducing their reliance on fossil fuels, and now we have that ban. So environmental groups are cheering the move, calling it a big blow to big oil, but New Zealand's opposition group is calling the decision economic vandalism, saying that it will put thousands of jobs at risk. After all, the oil and gas industry in New Zealand accounts for nearly $2 billion. Now, industry players were blindsided by this new ban. They claim they weren't given a heads up, and they think that the ban will actually just push investment and production overseas. However, it's worth stating there will be no immediate impact because there are currently still 31 active permits, that with the last one expiring around 2030.
Lisa Santarelli. The art of making pizza now has World Heritage status, making this year's World Pizza Championships in Parma, Italy, an even more passionate affair. Pizzaiolos from 44 countries compete to make the best, largest and fastest pies, and in something called freestyle. Caterina Orlandi, one of the organizing team, explains.
Each competitor has to prepare a 3-minute choreography that has to be made with pizza dough.
That sounds amazingly fun. But tell me about the actual judging of the pizza. I mean, what are the judges looking for? There are so many different kinds of pizza.
Pizza, you know, this Italian dish is not anymore Italian. It's a world dish. So anybody from anywhere could make and bake the best pizza ever. So the judges are looking for the best ingredients, the best raw materials, also a little bit of fantasy.
Can you give us some examples of the most exotic pizzas you've seen?
I've seen pizzas with insects. Is that good enough?
Yeah. That's very exotic. You mentioned all the different countries that competitors have come from and how it is an international cuisine. I mean, do Italians consider pizza Italian still?
The real Italian pizza is the Neapolitan STG pizza. This kind of pizza has only three precise recipes, which is margherita and marinara with tomato, with or without buffalo cheese, fior di latte, mozzarella. So this is the real Italian style.
Do you get a sense of how big a business it is globally at this competition?
Every year, the World Pizza Championship sees more and more participants. This is a booming business. We see from independent pizza shops to huge pizza chains.
Katerina Orlandi there. Finally, Toys R Us might be shuttering U.S. and British stores, but it's got more than 700 in Asia, and it's received bids of more than $1 billion from buyers for a majority stake there. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.